add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 103, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Yeah, I'm having a little fun. So the Mets tweeted out with the bucket hat too, which I didn't get the tweet. It's a little in the weeds if you're not a fan of the show, but they tweeted out a picture of Evan wearing it, which he does. He has the back. I mean, it's perfect, though. He has it full down in the front and up in the back. It's just tremendous. And they tweeted out, the Mets tweeted out the picture and said, oh my God, did you see Brian's hat? Which, what's the name of that show again? You should probably leave. What was the name of it again?
I think you should leave.
I think you should leave. I think you should probably leave is a Chris Stapleton song. But I think you should leave. It's like a short, sketch comedy show on Netflix. It's actually really funny, but there's a sketch where they're in court and they're reading testimony and they're reading some tweets that incriminated someone in the office. But in the tweets, they also mention that their coworker has this ridiculous hat and he's in the court and they're reading it about his hat. It's dumb, but it is a funny, funny sketch. It had me crying. I was just watching it again. I didn't get the reference. Fleeks had to tell me. But yeah, the Mets had a little fun at Evan's expense too. That hat is just, that is too much, man. It's someone's tweeting me the Gilligan's hat. It's kind of like the Gilligan. It is. I mean, it's a bucket hat like Gilligan, but Evan's wearing it inside. He has it down in the front and up in the back. I mean, only Evan. I swear, this guy. Only Evan. I've had the opportunity to get to know Evan very well, and I can tell you, he is unique. He is a unique individual. There is something about this dude. I've been on trips with him. We went to Boston, obviously, for the wild card game in 21. Not one of my finer moments. That one day I'll explain that whole trip. Oh, what a disaster that was. I was driving around. I'm driving around the entire city of Boston looking for an instant or, you know, instant COVID test because my wife tested positive for COVID while I was in the car with him. Oh my God. So I had to borrow his car while he's doing the show live from the studio in Boston. And I'm driving around Boston trying to get a rapid test. And thankfully I did not have COVID and we went to the game. It was just unbelievable. And then of course, Gerrit Cole did not give the Yankees any chance to win that game, and I had to sit there and have him sing in my face. It was a disaster. It was a disaster. But you get to know people in moments like that. And I'm telling you right now, I know Evan, and that hat it will never leave his side. That's his hat right there.
Will he wear it during the show later today?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I definitely think he will. I don't know about like the entire time, but he will have it with him, especially now the Mets are tweeting it out. Like it's kind of become a thing. He's going to get made fun of for it and he's going to have to justify it.
Good string of WFAN people at Mets games because they showed Bob and Harris on Wednesday night, mentioned Bob, and then we got Evan today.
Yeah. I saw Bob and Steve at a game not too long ago. So, yeah.
The only thing we were missing was the actual SNY booth making a comment about Evan's hat.
Right. They didn't say anything? I'm surprised. But, yeah, no, that hat is perfect. It's just perfect. It's just so him. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Obviously talking a lot about the Mets. The Yankees were off today. And thankfully, just for our mental break. They probably need a break. They haven't had a game off they played 16 straight games. Hopefully they can come home and play A's team that's really been, the last time they played the A's were above 500. The A's were playing well. They have completely fallen off. The pitching has been terrible for them. So hopefully the Yankees come in and figure something out. A lot of talk yesterday, and I did it to open the show. yesterday morning talking about, you know, Max Fried and Juan Soto and how the two are linked and what's better for the New York Yankees or like, and I don't think, you know, and I want to just clear it up because, you know, I said it, but I want to make it clear how I feel about Juan Soto because I'm a no plan B sucks. That's the kind of, I've been a plan B sucks guy from the Yankees and Juan Soto from the beginning. I wanted to make T-shirts like Sal made about the Worthless Baseball Classic, but I thought people would assume it was a political statement with, no, with Plan B sucks, so I chose not to do it. But like, there is no doubt this Yankee team is now better off for not having signed Juan Soto. There's no doubt. This Yankee team, this particular season, is better off. And I still believe, despite the Rays never losing, and I've done a lot of sarcasm today. Here's a little bit more, just in case you don't pick it up. I find it, I just want, I know the Rays have been winning, but I got a bunch of people, you know, oh, look, the Rays again just swept Kansas City. I thought Kansas City played in the American League Central, and I was under the impression beating teams in the American League Central doesn't mean jack squat. That's what everybody tells me, that beating teams in the American League Central doesn't matter. That games against the Cincinnati Reds in June is more telling than beating the Cleveland Guardians and the Kansas City Royals in the ALDS and ALCS, respectively. Those games mean nothing. Losing to Cincinnati means everything. And what else means everything? Tampa Bay beating Kansas City, because clearly that means they're unstoppable. Never mind the fact that when the Yankees beat Kansas City, we brush it off like it's absolute garbage and meaningless. But when Tampa Bay does it, woo, here come the Rays. Now, here come the Rays. They've been the hottest team in baseball for a month. But right now, I still expect this New York baseball team that is better without Juan Soto. And I don't know if that's going to be the case forever. That's why it's up to the New York Yankees to make moves in this offseason. And we can get into, and I will get into, you know, we talk so much about the deadline. And the Yankees do have a prospect right now in Spencer Jones, who's been talked about a lot, has been talked about a lot. And right now, he is having an excellent season down in AAA, or AA, rather. He's having an excellent season. He's leading the league in home runs. He's got, and he was injured. He's got 16 home runs and like 200 or 250 at-bats. His OPS is almost 1,000. He does strike out a lot, but he's having a very good year. And moving forward with this team, it's going to be interesting to see how they treat this deadline. Because I honestly think there is a very good chance, and we're going to get into it, there is a very good chance that either Spencer Jones or Jason Dominguez get traded at this deadline if the deadline breaks where those kind of players worthy of trading a Dominguez or Spencer Jones is on the table. If those players exist, like as we look to bolster this team, that to me, again, is better this one season without Juan Soto. And that was a topic for discussion a lot today, and I kind of started it yesterday morning talking about how Max Fried won them that game, and obviously Soto won the Mets that game, and how the two teams have benefited from those transactions. The Mets are clearly better with Juan Soto, and the Yankees, amazingly enough, are better this season without him, because I don't know where they'd be without Max Fried. And this offense still leads the American League in runs scored, despite being awful for 2 weeks. They have guys who are now, right, they have obviously Judge is the top vote getter in the American League wild all-star game, and he's already locked in. You've got Goldschmidt, a finalist for first base. You've got Rice, a finalist for DH. Obviously, Fried is an all-star. I think there's a good chance Carlos Rodon is an all-star. I mean, this team has had, despite the last 2 weeks, a pretty good season. They're still in first place. They got a lot of guys who are going to be all-stars. And they are better off this year without Juan Soto. It's moving forward that you wonder about. This is a 15-year contract. You're going to have guys coming off the books. They got to go out and get Tucker now. That's going to be as soon as the offseason. I heard someone saying that the Yankees should trade Spencer Jones for Tucker. I don't think the Cubs are interested in trading Kyle Tucker at the moment. But like moving forward with Juan Soto would have allowed the Yankees that signature player in the middle of the lineup to be the next superstar of the team and be the leader of the team after Judge's career is over, which I don't know how many more years. He signed a 9-year deal 2 years ago, so I think he's got another 6 years after this one. But how many of those six are going to be, is he going to be this type of player, MVP type player, where Juan Soto is only 26 years old, and we know that he's got more multi-home run games than anyone else in Major League Baseball history at the age of 26. But moving forward, you got Stanton's money eventually coming off the books. It's even going from 32 to 19 next year. You're going to have DJ LeMahieu off the books. You're going to have a lot of money off the books next year that could have went to this contract, go other places, keep Juan Soto in the middle of that lineup. It is yet to be determined whether or not moving on from Juan Soto was the best thing for the New York Yankees in general. And in fact, I still think it wasn't. I still wish they gave him the contract. I still wish they gave him the suites and the wardrobes and anything else that needed to be given to him. But this year, there's no doubt the Yankees are better off. And you could look at the All-Stars and you could look at Max Fried. But the question about this team is going to be, how do they improve with the All-Star break? Because as much as I'll tell you that they are, in my estimation, the best team in this division, and I think they're going to win the division. And honestly, I don't think it's going to be all that close. For two different reasons. The two different reasons why I think the Yankees are going to win this division are, one, the Tampa Bay Rays have hardly played any road games. The Tampa Bay Rays front-loaded their schedule because of the heat and the weather in Tampa. Before it gets into the real rainy months and the hot months, they wanted to play as many games at George M. Steinbrenner Field in Tampa as possible. They're going to be on the road a lot the second half of the year. They're going to be doing a lot of traveling. And I also heard something, a couple people I've heard say, which I disagree with, the idea that they've played a lot of home games, but it's not really a home field advantage because it's at George M. Steinbrenner Field and it's a Yankee field. It's not their field. I completely disagree with that. This is probably the best home field advantage they've ever had because they play in an empty doldrum of a ballpark that nobody goes to. It's a 40 or 38,000 people arena where nobody's there. They average 12 or 13,000 people a game, and it's a tenth. It's a quarter of the quarter of the building is empty for all those games. Now, yeah, this one only fits 11, but they're selling out. They've got an 11,000 people building filled at the minor league complex where it actually feels like it's. People are there. I think this is the best home field advantage. I mean, it's still in Tampa. It's still their homes. They don't have to travel for it. Their fan base, whatever it is still there. And they're actually playing in front of a building that only supports that many people, and it might feel filled as opposed to playing in an empty, cavernous ballpark with a terrible lighting system and dome where balls were lost and hit into the catwalk and everything else. Plus, I think the Yankees are better. I'm not overly concerned about the division just yet. I'm more concerned about how the Yankees are playing. And then the other reason is the Yankees are going to try to improve at the deadline. And we're going to have a conversation about whether or not you would trade Dominguez. I talked about this about a week ago. Whether or not you talk about Spencer Jones, because he's really starting to get hot again after coming back from injury. He's having a great year in the minors. How do you feel about moving one or both or one of those guys? We're all looking to the idea that they're going to go get Kyle Tucker in the offseason, or at least attempt to. If they do that, I could easily see them re-signing Grisham too. This outfield could easily become very crowded. And if players worth trading your top prospects emerge, I could see the Yankees moving Spencer Jones. We'll have to see. I don't know. They do like, when they have a guy they believe in, they like to see if he can come in and take over. I think nothing would please the Yankees more than to have a Dominguez, Judge, Spencer Jones outfield, but can you trust that? Can you wait for that? They waited at shortstop, and it's failing them right now. But as far as the division goes and Tampa, to me, the Yankees are better, and the Yankees will make a move at the deadline, and the Rays won't. The Rays, who their star shortstop just got convicted in the Dominican Republic for, you know, having a relationship with a minor. And I don't know if you saw that story, but that's, he got found guilty, sentenced to 2 years, and the sentence has been suspended. He got convicted of a relationship with a minor, and he got sentenced to 2 years in prison, and he's not going to serve it. It's been suspended as long as he promises not to do it again. Now, I don't know, he's convicted of a crime like that. I saw, you know, Jeff Passan talking about work visas and whether or not he's going to come back or whether Major League Baseball would even allow him back. But that's just a side note of an unbelievable story that has, you know, been on the, you know, on the forefront of baseball for a while now. But the Tampa Bay Rays, they're not going to trade for anybody. They never go for it. I know we praise them, and yes, they do an incredible job. They do more with less than anybody, right? There's no doubt about it. They are one of the smarter organizations who do less with more, and do more with less and have a great year. But I'm sorry. I know that the market they play in, and I just talked about how many ticket sales they have, the idea that the Rays can't afford to do anything. They never do anything. They never do anything. They'll, at this trade deadline, they won't attack what they need. They won't go and try and fill holes. They're just going to hope what they have is good enough, and we'll see if it is. But they have money to spend. They never do it. Never. They chose to give one guy money, and I just told you what's going on with him. They're smart. They're brilliant. And here's the other thing. Everyone's like, oh, look at what that. Can you imagine if the Rays management would have the Yankee money? Well, Bloom had the Red Sox money. What happened? Like these other executives, other than Friedman, who went to L.A. and is now running the Dodgers with, you know, Guggenheim full pockets. Name another Rays executive who went out on his own somewhere else and was successful. There's something about how they run their business. And it's not as easy to just say, imagine if they had the money Brian Cashman had, or imagine how bad Brian Cashman would be if he had the Tampa Bay's payroll. It's a different world. They're able to do things the Yankees cannot do. They're able to do things the Yankees cannot do. Now, the Yankees are clearly capable of doing things they cannot do, but the Yankees have to go out and give DJ LeMahieu a contract. Have to. He has two MVP borderline seasons, wins a batting title. They can't afford to say, well, listen, he's on the wrong side of 30. We got the best out of him. We'll let DJ walk. They're not allowed to not sign him. The fan base won't tolerate it. They're not allowed to trade good young players. Never sign a single guy. Move on from them and get packages back. They're not allowed to do that. You can't trade a glass now. You can't trade these guys. You think you can. You think they're smart. And I'm not saying they're not. The Yankees don't have that ability. You have to sign your superstars. You have to pay the guys who are successful for you. You have to give them big contracts because you have the money to do so. The Tampa Bay Rays are smart. They do a lot of interesting things. They continually put themselves in a position to have a winning baseball team. There is no doubt. But when it comes down to it, the Yankees are better. The Rays are playing a ton of road games. And the Rays will not look to improve themselves at the deadline. They will not bring on an ounce of money. They will not look to improve themselves. The Yankees are going to win this division. 888-808-1019. Quick break. Your Met calls, your Yankee calls. We'll get into the Knicks pick as well. With the draft, with the 51st pick, they trade back one slot. They take a player that better be in the rotation. Otherwise, the coach might get fired.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 127, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. You know, we talked about it there just briefly. It's hard to understand. And then me and Fleegs were talking about it during the break. I mean, Franco was found guilty of sexual abuse. He was given a sentence of 2 years. The sentence has already been commuted. And it's pretty much like if he does it again, they're going to make him serve his jail time. That's what's being reported. That if he comes close to a minor or if he in a sexual manner, they're going to make him serve the jail time he was sentenced for already doing it. That is unbelievable. That's hard to understand. It's hard to take, especially, you know, you don't have to be a father. I always hate when people say that, especially as a father. I mean, I think you don't need to be a father to understand how terrible that is, but I can just tell you, like, to think of it and to get 2 years and sentence commuted. I know he's on the exempt list. I don't think he's getting paid. I don't think he's going to see the money from his contract, but I don't know if he's going to get a work visa. I don't know if he'll ever be in Major League Baseball again. So you can argue that he lost a lot, but it's hard to understand how that sentencing went down. Hard to understand. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. And they're asking the same question. You know, I started yesterday morning. Nobody put that out. The only thing WFAN put out about me is how I said I was surprised Juan Soto cared so much about the home runs. I'm telling you. They're trying to portray me.
And that Pete might not be a Met next year.
And that Pete might not be a Met next year. I did a whole show on the Mets and the Yankees and a bunch of different things. But they picked the two topics. I said for half a second about Soto, and Evan brought something up today too, and thankfully he did. I said the same thing about Juan Soto when he was in a Yankee uniform. And he even mentioned me that he said he remembers Big Mac bringing it up last year. And I did. Juan Soto last year made a very big deal of hitting a home run in Seattle and making it the final ballpark. He's hit a home run in every single ballpark in Major League Baseball. And he made he was asked about it and he talked about how important it was to him. And look, I'm not trying to say it shouldn't be important to him or what an idiot or how dare he's got his priorities, you know, wrong. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I'm surprised that a player the level of Juan Soto cared as much as it seemed he cared to hit a home run in every single ballpark. Like his career wouldn't have been complete without it. And then last night or the other night, I'm sorry, that's a convoluted stat. That's more of just a footnote and an example and another way to say, wow, look how good he is at this young. The multiple home run games, like honestly, nobody cared. You don't care. We don't care. I'm surprised Juan Soto cared so much. He even went as far as to say in the post game that, yes, the win's important, but the most important thing to him was accomplishing that feat. I'm surprised. I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I'm not trying to kill him. I'm not trying he doesn't care about his team or about winning. Of course he does. Just watch him play. You know how much it means to him. But I'm just surprised he actually cared that much about that. But of course, that's the big story they put out about me. They want controversy. They want controversy. But you know, I started talking yesterday about which player means more to their teams, Max Fried or Juan Soto. And I didn't get to flesh it out completely because, you know, short show, doing a bunch of different things. I don't think it's close, unfortunately. And again, we're talking about this season. In fact, we're talking about this half a season because we don't know what's going to happen moving forward. And moving forward, we might have a different answer. But right now, there is no question to me which player has been more important to their team. Max Fried has been significantly more important to the Yankees than Juan Soto has been to the Mets. It's not even close. Max Fried's been great from day one. Max Fried, they lost their ace at the start of the year to Tommy John surgery. He had to step in and be the ace of the team. He's 9-1 in games he starts after they lose. He's been everything to them. He's having one of the best years a first-year starting pitcher for the New York Yankees has ever had. He's been everything for them. They win when he's on the mound. Juan Soto, as great as he is, didn't have a great first couple months of the season. Was not really the driving force behind any of the winning. Pete Alonso was much more important. Lindor was much more important, specifically to the offense, and clearly the starting pitching was more important than any of that. And now that he's finally got it going in June, it's through their worst stretch where they're losing games. And that's not to knock Juan Soto. Juan Soto's a great player, is having a great month, and is going to have a great career and go into the Hall of Fame in a Mets uniform, as I said. But when you're trying to figure out, you know, which signing was more impactful, and I talked about this too, because a lot of, like, as crazy as the Juan Soto contract is, and make no mistake, here's the other, like, this is, you know, it depends on how you want to put it, there's parsing words with this, because I would have given him the contract, but we all know he's overpaid. I mean, that's, nobody's worth the money he's getting. Like, the market dictated it. He's a great player. I would have given him the same contract. But we understand that that money is absurd. But he's worth it because he gets it because he's that great a player. And Max Fried, the contract's a bad contract. I'm a Yankee fan. I'll tell you, the 8 years, that's a bad contract. It's not a great contract. He's overpaid. The years are too much. And the reason why it's an interesting thing now is because if you care about such things, pitting the Met fan versus the Yankee fan, the Met fans laughed at the Yankees for both of these deals. Laughed at the Yankees because they couldn't give Juan Soto what he wanted. Laughed at the Yankees because Juan Soto chose the Met organization and the Met owner, and this is where winning is going to be in the city, and this is the better place to be. Plus, we have an owner with more money, not afraid to spend money and give free suites. And so the Met fan laughed at the Yankee fan. And then when they signed Max Fried, the Met fan laughed at the Yankee fan. 8 years for Max Fried? Oh, good grief. That's something our brilliant executive would never do. The Mets, you'll never catch the Mets giving an 8-year contract to a starting pitcher on the wrong side of 30. That's crazy talk. And the Met fan were chuckling about both of those contracts. And right now, there's no question which one has impacted the team more. Max Fried is having a Cy Young type year. So far, catch me in a month, we might have a different conversation about this, but really, I mean, I know he's already kind of caught up, but so far, Juan Soto hasn't been the best offensive player on the team this year. Max Fried's been, without question, the best starting pitcher. And they've needed every single bit of him. I mean, look, Pete Alonso, 65 RBIs. Third in the National League behind Suarez and Suzuki. There is no doubt what Max Fried has meant to the New York Yankees and to that pitching staff, which right now is on a heater. And that's why the other thing I'll say, look, I'm not saying the Yankees are a better team than the New York Mets. Haven't said that all year. I'm not going to say it now. But what I will say is that at the moment, my concerns are probably higher for the Mets than they are the Yankees. Last night went a long way to making me feel better about the team. But to me, the reason why I think the concerns are less for the Mets as opposed to for the Yankees as opposed to the Mets is that the Yankees pitching has been really good. Really good. And outside of the one blown game from Jonathan Loaisiga, which, by the way, that's whose fault it was, Jonathan Loaisiga, and nobody else's. This starting pitching has been really good, and it's an offense that for the first 2 months of the year prior to this stretch was the best in the American League. And with runners in scoring position, was top five in the American League. Fourth best in the month of April, second best in the month of month of May in all of Major League Baseball. So for 2 weeks, that offense went to crap while the pitching rotation has still been very good. That's pretty much that and some, you know, poor base running and some mental mistakes that we see throughout all of baseball. That's what's held back the Yankees for 2 weeks. The Mets right now, it's the offense still doing what it's done all year, struggling with runners in scoring position. And the pitching has completely faltered, some by just coming back to the means, and now, obviously, by injury. And they're dealing with so much injury in the starting rotation. They're dealing with guys reverting back to a little bit of who they were before joining the Mets pitching lab. And those concerns amplify for me. Because they now, this rotation's down to three guys that you trust, maybe even two. Hopefully Manaea comes back. And the offense that has been struggling through this stretch with runners in scoring position has struggled all year at that. So to me, while the Yankees might have even played worse during the stretch, the offense certainly was even worse than the Mets. And some of the same things that have hampered this team over the last couple of years, and certainly last year, have reared its ugly head during this stretch. But a lot of those things have been different all year. They made the least amount of outs on the base paths for the first 70 games of the season. The least. With runners in scoring position, they've been one of the better teams in all of baseball for the first 70 games. And with the runner on third, not that this is the be-all, end-all stat, because the numbers are kind of run middle of the road with runner on third and less than two outs, but that's been a major problem over the last 10 games or so. And they lead Major League Baseball in sacrifice flies. So a lot of the problems that have caused the Yankees to have this faltering, you know, 15-game stretch or so, a lot of those problems have only emerged during the stretch. A lot of the problems of the New York Mets have been there all year. And now this pitching, which you're right, if you're going to say, well, Chris, if you're going to say the Yankee lineup was good all year, then you have to acknowledge that the Mets pitching was good all year. Absolutely. The best in baseball. But it's not there anymore. Kodai Senga was part of that. He's not there right now. Griffin Canning was part of that. Unfortunately, he wasn't pitching the same way over his last handful of starts, and now, unfortunately, he's going to be gone for the rest of the year. Clay Holmes, not quite as dominant as been. The innings are a little bit down the last handful of starts. The home runs and walks are a little bit up. Certainly not pitching poorly, but with his innings, you start to question it. There are more question marks. When you're going to put together, and I mentioned this yesterday too, when you're going to put together a pitching lab, and I know we use that term loosely, and a lot of people are sick of it, but when you put together a staff, right, in the manner in which the Mets do it, and they bring in Griffin Canning and Clay Holmes and Frankie Montas, and they bring in a bunch of, you know, back into the rotation guys that they see promise in, even when it's successful, and by every stretch of the imagination, it's been wildly successful. So I'm not knocking it. But when it starts to falter, the question marks become more severe because it's not proven guys just going through a bad turn. It's like a position player who's 35. When you slump at 28, it's a slump and he's got to get out of it. When you slump at 35, I think he's done. Those are the difference in the questions being asked about the player. When you slump at 28, it's, oh my, how's he going to get out of this? What's his problem? What's the issue? When you slump at 35, 34, is this the end of the career? So when you have a pitching rotation with, you know, let's just say the Dodger one, I know that's besieged with injury, but if you have a pitching rotation of Glasnow and Snell and Otani and Yamamoto, and you start to pitch poorly, well, I mean, listen, they're pitching poorly now, but I'm sure they'll be all right. Something's up with them. They'll figure it out. I expect those guys to be good. When your rotation starts to falter and it's the names of Griffin Canning, Frankie Montas, Paul Blackburn, McGill, Clay Holmes, when those guys start to falter, the question is, well, was it all a mirage? That's the difference. And I'm not saying it was a mirage. I'm just saying that's what the Mets still have to go out and prove. So while I expect the Mets to answer the questions in an affirmative fashion. The fact of the matter is, right now, despite even how ugly it's been and the Yankees are furious with their team and everything, the concerns for me are probably still more, you know, on the forefront for the New York Mets, because the offense has been an issue all year. That is not the case for the Yankees. The pitching right now is very good for the New York Yankees. That's not the case for the New York Mets, and they're dealing with an enormous amount of injuries. And the Yankees still have Luis Gil coming back. And now when you look at this rotation for the first time, I think now they're in a position where Stearns is going to have to go out at the deadline and acquire starting pitching. I wasn't sure that was really on the forefront. I wasn't sure that was a real legitimate thing, that the Mets would have to go out and add a starting pitcher, because I don't expect them to add a top of the rotation starter. And unless they were going to do that, the depth was good enough. And I didn't think getting another fourth or fifth starter would be all that important to this team. But now, after last night and losing Griffin Canning, I think you really are going to have to start at looking at acquiring a starting pitcher. It's not going to be an ace. Sandy Alcantara has started to turn his season around after just a god-awful start. The last handful of starts have been better. I'm not sure what other top-end, you know, really good starting pitcher is going to shake loose. As we said and have talked about time and time again, this trade deadline needs to be moved back significantly. Like, I would have to ask Major League Baseball, why can't it be August 31st? Why can't you have a player for 1 month, the month of September, and go about? Like, do you want to have a real, like, I mean, tell me, I mean, let's be really crazy. Why even have a deadline? What if there was no deadline? What if up until the last minutes of, like, I guess it would lead to bad trades? Or it's like, what would be the issue of trading for someone a week? I was thinking about this yesterday. And, Fleeks, I'd like your opinion on this, if you don't mind, because I'm just trying to think this out. What would it look like if there was no deadline at all? What if at any moment prior to the postseason, now once teams get officially eliminated, they would be obviously more willing to trade players, but what's the harm in it? That any team could pick up? Like, any postseason team, is they're just about to get ready? I mean, would teams be willing to take anything for players off one-year contracts? I suppose, right? I mean, how far could this trade deadline go? What's the negative of pushing it back further or even not having one?
You don't think that Steve Cohen would and George would have just straight up bought a player late September? Like, maybe it's because there's an injury in the last month, or maybe just because they decide, you know what, another team is willing to sell this guy, they're out of it, and, you know, $8 million straight up for this player, you just add him to your roster. That's why, I mean, listen, it would be great for the big market teams.
Yeah.
If the Yankees decided to act like that now, I mean, it'd be great for them. The Mets would do that.
Yeah, there would be, and maybe you'd have to.
It would punish these disgraceful organizations like the Tampa Bay Rays. So
yeah,
I'd be for it, but that's the negative and why baseball won't do it.
Yeah, I mean, God knows they do enough to protect these lousy owners with every stinking rule. I mean, I guess you'd have to come up with a rule that, you know, prospects of some sort of, you know, level. But again, for 1 week, what would you have to give up for 1 week of someone? I mean, that's the question.
So you're saying, and they're not postseason eligible?
No, postseason eligible.
Well, that's the thing. Because, I mean, there have been times we've seen teams add a guy back when there was waivers, and just to have him on the roster, maybe help you get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
If they were playoff eligible, you would straight up see the purchasing of players in mid to late September.
Just straight up.
I mean, it'd be entertaining. Bring it on.
It would be just straight up cash.
Could you imagine the calls we'd get, like, about the Mets and Yankees? Like, just call up this team. They're out of it. Just buy the guy.
That's true. But I honestly think now you could push it back pretty far. I'm just spitballing with the idea of why even have one. That would be interesting. Why not? Last game of the year, a major component goes down. Just trade with one of the teams that are out of it. You could see full rosters being moved. Why wait for the offseason? Just trade him right then and there. But it needs to be moved at least a couple of weeks because we are not designating buyers and sellers. Until later than July. And right now, for the first time, I really feel like the Mets might have to add a starting pitcher. I didn't think they would have to. You're clearly looking for another bat. It seems like center field is probably the easiest way to go about it. We're going to find out if Mauricio's on this team tomorrow, but you're still looking. You could look to add a couple of bats. You could obviously look to add bullpen help, which every team who's going to be adding is going to be looking to add some level of bullpen help. But now I think the Mets could add starting pitching to their list of needs and wants. Because I don't know, again, if everything, if Manaea comes back and is great, if Senga comes back and is great, fine. But in the meantime, you're right there battling for a division. They might need something just to stabilize the bottom of the rotation a little bit. And we'll see if those guys are available. I'm assuming you're going to be able to get some back end of the rotation pieces. And look, the Mets have a very successful, proven process of finding guys where the value doesn't seem that high, and they turn them into high-valued starters. So there's got to be someone they have their eyes on, the next guy. And certainly, if there's a pitcher looking a pitcher who's going to be a free agent next year, they certainly looked at him because they certainly deal with these, you know, short-term free agent signings. So there's got to be starters out there that we're not even thinking of, not even having great years on teams that might sell, that the Mets might be targeting and getting ready for next year's free agency. So I think this is the first time where you're really going to be looking at the idea of the Mets needing to add starting pitching off the Griffin Canning injury. I don't think there's any way around it. I'm not saying they're definitely going to pull the trigger and you see what's up, and maybe they could pull up, you know, they could bring up a prospect. They've got a couple prospects in the minor leagues to bring up and add to this rotation, but I could easily see the Mets adding a starting pitcher because now I feel like they need another one in the rotation. And for the Yankees, this trade deadline, as we get closer to it, we know what they need, right? They need a bat. You'd love to move Jazz back to second off of third base. I think DJ LeMahieu is starting to prove again that while probably better than he's been the last 2 years, he's not someone you feel very good about being your everyday second baseman. Like, he's just not. He's better than he's been. It's not a disaster. He's making legitimate contact with the ball. He's actually driving the ball every now and then, but he's still not giving you enough. And defensively, he's terrible. So they're going to need to improve there. You would love to add a third baseman. Suarez from the Diamondbacks would be the perfect one. He's leading the National League in RBIs. He's having a great year, hitting a ton of home runs. He's not all that great defensively, but he's probably just as good as Jazz is at third at the moment, although Jazz is capable of excellent plays. If you could move Jazz back to second base, bring in a third baseman that can play either IKF, right? That's the low-level ones. The IKFs of the world, the Rengifo, who's having a down season in Anaheim after having a good one last year. I read an article today that they view him as a guy they like and a guy who they think could be really encouraged with a change of scenery. You know, those are the type of smaller moves, Rengifo, IKF. And those guys can play third base, and you can move Jazz back to second. They clearly need that. You're going to look at the back end of the bullpen. I don't think they're going to do the rotation. They got Luis Gil coming back, and the rotation's been very good. So, to me, the question with the New York Yankees is twofold. And it's the two prospects. You know what they need. You know what they're going to be looking for. The question is, what level of player is going to be available? And if it is a Suarez, or if it is a big-time player, a solution you didn't expect to present itself. Because for IKF, I'm not trading Dominguez. For IKF, I'm not trading some of their bigger prospects. I'm not trading because I think Dominguez can literally be someone they look to trade this year. We have seen that Trent Grisham is getting a lot of the playing time. He's having a great year. He's an excellent center fielder. He's a far better defensive player than Dominguez is. And I could see him easily moved. And then the other one is Spencer Jones. Like, I'm wondering how they feel about Dominguez, how they feel about Spencer Jones, their intention of signing Tucker in the offseason, or at least their intention of going all in for Tucker in the offseason. How they view this outfield right now. Do they view giving Grisham a contract as a possibility? And if so, how do they view him? Because I'm sure coming off of this year, Trent Grisham's going to get paid. Someone's going to look to make Trent Grisham their starting center fielder. And if Dominguez, depending on how you feel, now he's starting to heat up. He's starting to do better his last 40 at-bats or so, right-handed. I think they believe in him. I think he's gotten better defensively. He's getting better offensively from the right-handed side. I'm curious to see if they how they view him, because he has been the odd man out in the rotation in the outfield. Trent Grisham has played clearly more. They value his defense in center. Bellinger is obviously making $25 million. We'll see if he opts in or opts out. I would imagine he's having a good enough season where he would try and opt out. So, unless he loves being a Yankee. The question to me is, Jason Dominguez, I don't think they're going to trade Lombard Jr. I don't think they would trade him right now. He's an up-and-coming shortstop prospect. He's not even having a great offensive season in AA. I think they believe in him, but he's young. He's a couple years away. Spencer Jones is the guy right now who has been the name we've heard for a while. He's already 24, 25 years old. He's leading AA in home runs. He's got a 947 OPS. Like, he's it's next year he's on the team, or he's just waiting to be on the team. Like, there is nothing else for him to do. Get a couple of at-bats in AAA. It's overrated. A lot of these prospects do most of their work in AA anyway. Like, he's on the cusp of being a Yankee next year. And depending on how they value him, depending on how they see him, could this trade deadline, because to me, if they sign Tucker, he absolutely becomes a trade chip. One of the two absolutely become trade chips. Either him and Dominguez become a trade chip the minute they sign Kyle Tucker. But if they don't, do they wait? Do they move him now in hopes of getting Tucker, and then they'll figure it out if they don't? Or do they wait until they sign a Tucker and then look to trade one of these two? But to me, it depends on what level prospect, because I think they're going for championships. I don't think there's any doubt. Brian Cashman and this front office and Hal Steinbrenner, I know that they didn't go pick up a third baseman to start the year, but they're going to look to make an impact move. They allowed it to be, you got to remember the Oswaldo Cabrera injury was a killer. They went into the season saying, we still have DJ LeMahieu. We have Oswaldo Cabrera. We have Peraza. We've put the rest of the team around it. We went out and got another ace to go along with Gerrit Cole. You know, obviously Gerrit Cole ends up getting hurt, but they're like, the starting pitching is going to be excellent. We put a bunch of different pieces around the offense. There's really not a great answer at third base. Let's just go into the season seeing what third base looks like with DJ LeMahieu, with Peraza, and with Oswaldo Cabrera. See if any of those stick, see if we can get anything out of any of them. And then at the trade deadline, we'll reassess and see if we can go out and trade for a third baseman. In today's day and age with the trade deadline, I don't love that thought process, but I understand it. I was screaming about Nolan Arenado, but let's be fair. His offensive season hasn't been very good. And it would have been 3 years worth of money. We would have been screaming about how is he still on the team next year. So like, I get it. I still think they're in a championship window, and I still think they're going to act like it at the deadline if they have the right move. The problem is, what does the deadline look like? And if it's a good big piece, are they willing to move Dominguez because he is kind of the odd man out? How do they feel about him? Do they believe his defense transitions into being an everyday center fielder, because the value of him, to me, with his speed, is in center field? And if you're going to go try and sign a Tucker, that's your two corner outfielders are filled with Judge and Tucker. And you can live with down offense at the center field position with those two guys in your corner outfields. But you don't want to give up defense in center field. So do they view Dominguez as a defensive center fielder? And if not, and if he's the third man out, if he's the man out right now, could they improve this roster, improve this team by moving him? Get better, have answers in the outfield moving forward, and trading him right now at this age, his speed, what he's viewed as right now inside Major League Baseball, which I think is his stock is pretty high. Same thing with Spencer Jones. It's going to be very interesting to see if either of these guys are made available to trade deadline.